again. Hopefully you can hear me now. Sorry. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Secretariat. It's a pleasure to be with you again today, and I hope you had a good evening and had time to reflect on some of the progress we made yesterday. I'm happy to try and clarify the questions from the distinguished chairman immediately. Firstly, in terms of the notification requirements, the intention here is to create transparency whereby anybody who has undertaken to be bound by the model rules, that needs to be known. It needs to be known to creditors, it needs to be known to other parties, because they assume obligations because of that. In particular, what we've been trying to deal with is the fact that there will be situations where there will be non-consensual interests being registered, and a critical part of that is being able to register against the Orvis number, and the Orvis number has to be on the rolling stock. Otherwise, the registration is not worth much. To give you a very classic example, in some declarations made by ratifying states on the aircraft protocol, what has happened has been that governments have reserved the position, for example, to enforce tax claims against a particular company, and that they can assert a lien for tax claims if they're not properly paid. And in that situation, they would need to register the international interest against the assets of the defaulting company, even though there's no contractual relationship between the tax administration and the company concerned. And so the only way that we can cure that is by ensuring that there is a unilateral declaration. And when the party asserting the claim is able to enforce that the party making the declaration does actually put the number on the side of the wagon, then he does have proper security. So he needs to know. The government, for example, in that case, needs to know that there is the ability to enforce the claim through the operation of the model rules. So the notification requirement and the publicity, as we see it, is very important so that all creditors know whether a particular party is abiding by the rules and will comply with them, even though there may not be a contractual relationship between individual parties whereby rules can be enforced on that basis. The second question related to the contracting state, and I just want to emphasize again, contracting states are not parties to these model rules, as we see it, unless they are themselves commercial actors. If the National Railways, for example, are a division of a state, and that railway company borrows money in the private sector, pledges assets, then of course, then the contracting state through its railway division is hopefully a party to these rules and will agree to be bound by them. But otherwise, that's not necessary. However, it is important that we have references to the contracting state, which is a state that's adopted or ratified the Luxembourg Protocol. We do need references there because, for example, we were talking before about the need to involve contracting states in the operation of the revisions committee. There will be other situations where the need to refer to the contracting state itself will be important. To take the example I gave you before, if there is a declaration by a contracting state concerning overriding liens in relation to, let's say, tax claims, then that needs to be referred to in the model rules, and it is, where we talk about the definition of a non-consensual right or interest. So the reference to contracting state is exactly that. It's a reference point the contracting state is not a party to the model rules unless it is a commercial actor, which doesn't mean that it's ruled out for a contracting state to issue regulations itself to make individual operators or actors, commercial parties, adopt the rules unilaterally. And in fact, we envisage that could well happen. And it may even happen in the Russian Federation, where the government says, look, everyone should just abide by these rules. We expect you all to adopt the rules. And then the situation is well set. So whenever private finance comes in, whether it's through leasing or through secured credit, the declaration's already made. It's already in the system. And the creditor can rely on the fact that the debtor will abide by those rules. So I hope I've gone some way to explain that. I know this is a little bit complicated, but we're dealing at the end of the day with a private law treaty, and we're also dealing with a set of model rules which are intended to be binding on individual commercial actors, not on states. I'm sorry, was everything...